From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In a surprise announcement this morning, Harriet Myers withdrew her name from consideration for Sandra Day O'Connor's seat on the Supreme Court. President Bush's embattled nominee is off the table. After weeks of insisting he would stand by his pick, the president said today he was reluctantly accepting her decision to withdraw. Myers faced stiff and heated opposition on many fronts, most notably from staunch conservatives at the heart of the president's political base. In her letter to the president today, Myers said her nomination would, quote, create a burden for the White House and our staff that is not in the best interest of the country. This hour on Point, Harriet Myers withdraws and next steps in the battle for the Supreme Court. You can join the conversation. Was she right to go? Who's won and who has lost today? And what now? Will President Bush feel politically required to name a hardcore conservative for the Supreme Court? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We go straight to Washington and Jan Crawford Greenberg, Supreme Court reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Jan, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Give us the formal logic of Harriet Myers' letter today. What did she say?
Well, the story out of the White House and in the president's statement as well is that the pressure from the senators was growing so intense to get access to these documents that she worked on during her tenure in the White House that it was better for her just to withdraw now, because the president, for example, in his statement said he felt he could not release those documents. It was, you know, privileged information, and so as a result, she just had to step down. Now, this is a fight that they've made for years, and for example, John Roberts, senators on the left, said they wanted to see documents that he did when he was in the Reagan administration. The White House said no, and Roberts got confirmed. Today, they're changing tack and in a face-saving measure, using this as an excuse to pull the Myers nomination.
So Harriet Myers, White House counsel, has worked at the White House for years, and the blanket drawn around this withdrawal today is one of constitutional separation of powers. That's the formal reason given. Look under the covers with us here for a moment, Jan. What do you see?
Well, again, I mean, these arguments and the request for documents were made in the nomination of John Roberts to be Chief Justice. The White House stood firm, and senators went ahead and confirmed him. So this feels very much like a face-saving measure, a way to kind of gracefully pull back on this nomination that has gone obviously so poorly from the beginning. The drumbeat has been increasing now for the last week or two that she should withdraw. Her visits on Capitol Hill have not gone well. Her practice sessions with lawyers who have been trying to prepare her for her upcoming hearings also have gone very poorly. So everything came together today, and she has given this letter to the president. And the reason that they're giving, again, is, you know, these documents are just so sensitive, and they just can't be in the position of having to turn those things over.
There's the given reason, but we've all seen the political heat. Where does the president turn now, Jan?
Well, we're going to be reporting this throughout the day, but they've been thinking about this O'Connor nomination for months and months. I mean, she stepped down at the end of June. So they'll go back to the original list. He wanted to nominate a woman. That's why he turned to Harriet Myers. I would not be surprised if he now turns to a man, a white male, a well-known judge, someone like, say, Sam Alito from New Jersey. He also will be looking at other women who were on the short list, but he wasn't comfortable with those women before. They just weren't the right pick, he felt, for this job. That's why he turned to his longtime trusted advisor from Texas, Harriet Myers. So he's going to go back to the drawing board. I would expect this nomination pretty quickly, and I would not be surprised if it's someone, say a Sam Alito, that the conservative legal groups are very, very comfortable with, because he's got to repair this badly fractured party that this nomination has created.
Meanwhile, at the Supreme Court, Sandra Day O'Connor stands, having announced she's ready to retire, waiting for the new nominee to be confirmed to do that. Does that affect the operation of the court, Jen?
It certainly does. Justice O'Connor will sit on the bench until her successor is confirmed, but it's unclear what that even means for the cases. For example, she's in the argument, she's participating in the argument, she's asking questions, as she always does. But if she's not on the bench when the court is ready to release an opinion in a case, even if she participated in the argument, her vote is not going to count. So it's kind of this bizarre situation up there where she's participating, but we're not really sure if her vote's going to matter. So it's all just kind of up in the air. And now with this nomination going out the window and getting a new one and getting up to speed, it looks like Justice O'Connor is going to be sitting up there for the next couple months at least. And, of course, her influence will be felt more than we had expected. This is a big term for this court. There are important decisions coming down. Abortion cases are going to be argued, for example, at the end of November. And it looks like now Justice O'Connor will have a very important role that we certainly had not expected at the end of the summer.
An amazing political moment and one with enormous consequences for constitutional interpretation. Jan Crawford Greenberg, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Jan Crawford Greenberg, Supreme Court reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Joining me now from Washington is Jonathan Turley, longtime Supreme Court watcher and professor at George Washington University School of Law. Jonathan Turley, great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Jack, good to have you.
Hello, Tom. Hello to our guest.
Here we are. What a day. Jonathan Turley, your interpretation.
Well, quite frankly, I think Harriet Myers has shown more responsibility in withdrawing her nomination than the president showed in giving her the nomination. You know, he did her no favor by nominating her, despite what were facial problems. I mean, the terrible thing for Harriet Myers is that because many opposed her, including myself, it left the impression that we thought she was some type of dolt or village idiot, and she's not. She's a very accomplished lawyer. What was the main criticism coming from academics was that she lacked the type of credentials that would justify an appointment to the Supreme Court, that she just hadn't really made any outstanding contribution to the law. Now, that hasn't always been the standard, but that's what the standard should be. For conservatives, they felt betrayed because this was the moment they had been waiting for. This is the most important nomination to the court in decades. They are about to get the first stable, reliable conservative majority, and there are dozens of cases dangling by a single vote. And they wanted someone who would bring depth and a certain intellectual prowess to the position. And so the question now will become, can this president redeem himself and sort of answer that call of a legacy?
With a new nomination, Jonathan Turley, Jack, stand by. I want to turn to a conservative voice right now joining us from New York City, Bill Kristol, editor of the Weekly Standard. Bill Kristol, thanks for being with us. Your reaction to the Harriet Myers withdrawal?
I'm relieved and pleased. I appreciate what she's done, and I think she did the right thing. I agree with Jonathan that the president did her no service by nominating her. I guess, frankly, she did no service by accepting it. She might have counseled him that this was the wrong thing to do, but it's always hard to do in your own case. She's withdrawn. It was really just getting embarrassing. You know, she was neither had any articulated conservative constitutional jurisprudence, nor did she have exceptional or even, frankly, terribly distinguished qualifications for this position. So I think it was becoming embarrassing. I think she did the right thing. I think it's good for the president. It clears the decks. He's going to have a horrible day tomorrow with indictments, presumably, but then at least next week he can nominate a strong, distinguished conservative judge or legal scholar or lawyer, and I think at least for those of us who care about this issue, and that's a lot of conservatives, there'll be a rallying to that person and to the president.
Bill Kristol, why do you think the president nominated Harriet Myers in the first place, and how far to the right do you expect him now to turn for his next nominee?
Well, on the second thing first, I'm not particularly, he'll nominate one of the standard list of very respectable, I would say, conservative appellate court judges, or someone like Mike McConnell, probably one of the top constitutional scholars of his generation, who is now on the Tenth Circuit, incidentally was put on that by a unanimous vote of the Senate, or someone a little more controversial like Edith Jones or Alice Batchelder of the, I guess, Fifth and Sixth Circuit, respectively, who've both been on the bench for 20 years and, distinguished records. So I think he'll nominate someone conservative, but with real credentials. There might be a fight about it, but at least there'll be a fight on constitutional philosophy and not on whether this person is up to the job. Why did the president do it? He and Mrs. Bush liked Ms. Myers, and they thought somehow that, their own judgment that she was a good person and a competent lawyer somehow would carry the day with senators and with, people on the outside. And I don't think they really thought through that a Supreme Court nomination is totally different from putting someone on your staff or in your cabinet, where there's a huge amount of deference, of course, to the president. But even an appellate court, if he had nominated Harry Myers for a circuit court, I imagine she would have been confirmed. And if she had done a good job for 2 or 3 years, she might have been a credible Supreme Court nominee. But to put her just right up to the Supreme Court, I think that was just a huge misjudgment by the president.
And Bill, finally and quickly, I know we've got you just for a second. What about the political implications of this? Does this mean the ascendancy, the full ascendancy of the staunch right is proven? It's clout here?
No,
what?
No, I mean, Jonathan's right. An awful lot of the objections to this were simply on grounds of qualifications and distinction. And, you know, he could nominate a moderate conservative, a John Roberts type, if you will, and we'll all support that, too. I myself might prefer a slightly stauncher, someone with a little bit more of a sharp-edged record, but that's that's just a matter of different people and different preferences and slightly different takes on constitutional law. But no, this was collapsing of its own weight. I mean, we shouldn't exaggerate the importance of people like me or even of conservative interest groups. I mean, this was just a bad nomination, and I'm happy to say that conservatives are a little stronger as a result of this withdrawal, but I honestly think, I wouldn't overread the implications of this in terms of and this is what the Democrats' senators now are taking to the floor, saying this is a terrible victory for extreme right wing, which, of course, is ludicrous, I think.
Bill Kristol, editor of the Weekly Standard, on his way to the airport in New York. Bill, thanks very much for joining us.
I'm on my way up to Boston to debate the war at MIT, where I'm sure I'll have an extremely supportive and friendly audience. So.
No doubt.
Thanks a lot.
The nose warmers are ready. Jack Beatty, we just got a second before the break, but what a day.
What a day. You know, the president, many people felt, made this appointment out of weakness, the post-Katrina disaster. And the irony is, of course, it's made him all the weaker.
The weaker, and we'll see what comes next. And quickly, we're told, we're talking about Harriet Myers out as Supreme Court nominee by her own withdrawal. Jonathan Turley is with us. Much more to come. You can join us as well. Was she right to go? And who has won? What has won? Who has won? What has lost today in Washington? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Harriet Myers out as Supreme Court nominee by her own withdrawal this morning. And what comes next for President Bush and the court? You can join us. Should she ever have been nominated, what do you make of her withdrawal? What do you make of Harry Reid saying the GOP hard right will now pursue their skewed goals with the next nominee from President Bush to the court? Are you relieved that she's gone? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joined in this hour from Washington by Jonathan Turley, law professor at George Washington University and a great analyst of the court. Our own Jack Beatty is with us. And right now, also from Washington, Richard Viguerie, longtime conservative activist, Republican strategist, a pioneer in direct mail political campaigning, was with us just a few days ago saying Harriet Myers should go. Mr. Viguerie, she's gone. Your reaction?
Wow, I can hardly believe it. I was beginning to believe, Tom, that she could not sustain this through the hearings, but I quite frankly didn't think it would happen this quick. And, you know, it's a relief. I think the president now has an opportunity to save his presidency. I think another 2 or 3 weeks of this, and he would have driven such a wedge between himself and his supporters, it had been very difficult for him to govern for the remainder of his presidency.
How much of this withdrawal do you attribute to the clamor in the right that you're part of?
Well, in terms of the opposition from the conservatives, I think it's entirely responsible for the withdrawal here. I think that, you know, when you're in the White House and you're president of the United States, you got to have a certain amount of hubris there, I guess, and think that you can, you know, do just about anything you want. You're unhappy with somebody, you can go to war or whatever it might be. But he just misread the conservative movement, and I think he had played the conservative movement, quite frankly, like a violin the first 5 years of his presidency, greatly growing the size of government and governing from the center instead of the conservative that he told us he was. And it came as a shock and a surprise to him when he went to perhaps one bridge too far, and conservatives just said, that's it. You promised us Scalia and Thomases, and you've betrayed us. And I think he's as surprised as anybody.
She was nominated October 3rd. October 4th, the next day, George Will wrote, the Senate should be guided by three rules. Number one, it is not important that she be confirmed. Number two, it might be very important that she not be. And third, said George Will, they should come with the presumption that her nomination is not a defensible exercise of presidential discretion. Read the political winds for us here, Richard Viguerie. Looking forward from this, does this mean that the Republican Party is re-welded to the very conservative wing of its base? Is that now a solid seam going into the midterms and the next election?
You know, there is a difference between appointing a stealth candidate, someone who maybe actually has views diametrically opposed to the base of the party, and somebody that is way off to the right. Scalia and Thomas are clearly in the mainstream of American thinking, supported by elections. The election in 2002 and 2004 was fought over what type of court you want. And the American people came down on the side of the Republicans. There is a political solution to this problem. You know, the president thinks maybe he has to have his first nominee, whoever that might be, approved by the Senate. Not necessarily so. It's okay to have the Senate reject his first nominee, put up another one, and if they reject that one, another one. There's a political solution to this problem, and it's called elections. And the president scored a big victory in the 2002 election, unexpectedly, because the Democrats had vetoed his Homeland Security legislation, so he took it to the public, and the public issued their decision. And that's what we should do here. We should have a national debate about what we want in the way of a country regarding same-sex marriage, God and the Pledge of Allegiance, Ten Commandments on the school walls, private property rights, and that could save this presidency. That could turn this presidency from a 38% in the polls to a 55% if he chooses the territory that the American people share with him.
And we hear, perhaps, the footsteps of that all coming this morning in Harriet Meyer's withdrawal, perhaps. Let's hear a voice from the Democratic side of the aisle. Here this morning was New York Senator Chuck Schumer reacting to the Meyer's withdrawal and the prospect of another nominee.
The president now should take his time. When we do it again, the president should do it right. Slowly, deliberately, carefully, with real consultation and real consensus. One of the reasons for this problem, this mistake, is that there was no real consultation. There was no real reaching out and discussion of names back and forth. They would ask us, well, who do you like? But they wouldn't discuss things at all.
Democratic Senator from New York, Chuck Schumer, responding this morning to Harriet Meyer's withdrawal. Joining us right now from Washington is John Harwood, National Political Editor for The Wall Street Journal. John, thank you for being with us. What is your interpretation of the political backdrop to this withdrawal and the landscape ahead?
Well, the backdrop is extreme political duress for the White House, and in the face of that, a trouble on a whole range of fronts, from domestic policy to Iraq to the scandal investigations, the administration simply decided to cut its losses. And I think on the question of where they go next, I think Chuck Schumer is probably not likely to get his wish. I expect the White House will move quickly to try to turn the page here, and I also expect they'll move towards somebody who will satisfy the conservative wing of the Republican Party, people like Richard Viguerie. This administration, the last few weeks, has gotten its first real test of fighting with its own base on an issue that the base really cared about, and it didn't feel very good.
John, Harry Reid, minority leader in the Senate, saying today of the right wing, he said they want a nominee with a proven record of supporting their skewed goals. Are we headed back toward the nuclear option in the Senate?
I think that's a possibility, depending on who the president picks. But I still think that even if the president picks somebody, you know, it's very hard to find John Roberts. If there were a whole bunch of John Roberts out there, this would be a pretty easy process. But if the president picks somebody who's considered a star in the field of constitutional law, even if that person is a proven conservative who makes the right of the Republican Party happy, that doesn't necessarily mean the Democrats have got the clout to block that nominee with the filibuster. I think you'd have to assume going in that a stellar constitutionalist choice on the right would have better than even odds of getting through.
And John, finally, what about the potential doubling up that we may see in the next 24 hours here? If indictments come down from Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald, they may touch Karl Rove, they may touch Scooter Libby. This is right into the White House. There's a battle royal that would surely ensue there on interpretation of those indictments. If we get a more conservative nominee for the court and those indictments at the same time, what's coming at us here in Washington?
Well, one of the things I think we're likely to see is a substantial shakeup of the White House staff. And we might get a new chief of staff. Andy Card's had that job for a long time. It's a very taxing job. And when I talk to Republicans on Capitol Hill, they say, you know, we need some fresh blood in there. That's something that potentially could slow down a court process if you did have a wholesale shakeup. But we've got to see what the special prosecutor decides. If he decides not to charge Karl Rove, and Karl Rove stays there, there you have the most important figure would still be in the White House, and you'd have some continuity.
John Harwood, national political editor for the Wall Street Journal. John, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Jonathan Turley, help us out here with the spectrum of likely possible nominees the president may consider now. How wide a spectrum do you see him looking at? Is there a short list that's obvious or not?
Well, nothing is obvious after the Harriet Myers nomination. I mean, there's a various list. If you take the list of the sort of leading candidates, they include a lot of white males, which may be politically not acceptable to the president. People like Michael McConnell comes with the advantage of being very, very young, which is one of the things that they wanted. He's someone who could be on the court for decades and somebody who would be really unassailable in terms of his credentials. People like Michael Luttig on the Fourth Circuit is a real favorite of conservatives. He's also young. These people are like 49, 50, 51.
Mm-hmm.
Alberto Gonzalez would normally be the go-to guy with a failed nomination like this. He's a known quantity. The problem is if he appoints Alberto Gonzalez, it looks like this guy just picks whoever's standing in front of him at the given moment because, you know, he picked Harriet Myers, then he picked one of his staff to replace Greenspan. Now he would pick another friend, Alberto Gonzalez. And it does seem to fulfill the sort of stereotype that he has sort of extreme myopia. In some of the other candidates, I don't agree with Jan that Sam Alito would be an obvious choice. Sam Alito is on the Third Circuit in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
He's referred to as Scalito because he's so much like Anton Scalia.
Mm-hmm.
But while he's bright and he's young, he's also a real lightning rod. He has made his opposition to abortion very, very clear. I think he would trigger a filibuster. Edith Jones would be an obvious choice. She's a true favorite of the conservatives. But I think that Edith Jones would probably be defeated on filibuster. I assume there would be a very fierce fight. I mean, the Democrats would go to DEFCON 4 over something like that.
Mm-hmm. Jack Beatty, big political picture emerging here. As Jonathan Turley says, we could well get back in that kind of red zone with a nuclear option that is filibustering to try and kill a nomination would erupt again in the Senate. We have the prospect here of that going on and at the same time, very possibly, as soon as tomorrow, very high-level indictments at the White House, which are a kind of a shadow play debate over the war in Iraq itself. This is a lot of political tension in one capital.
Yeah, it's a political Katrina, isn't it? And when you look at those Democrats who are in that gang of 14 and the filibuster with the appellate court nominees, look what's happened to them. Senator Byrd, Senator Nelson, opposition back in when they were first on the gang of 14 looked like it was going to be strong, but not now. Prime candidates in both West Virginia and Nebraska, also in North Dakota and in Florida, have said, no, this isn't going to be a Republican year. We don't want to run, leaving those senators in a much better position to join a filibuster than they were just a few weeks ago.
So we could mount up to really quite something here. I want to begin to invite our listeners in. Janice is calling from Baltimore. Hi, Janice. You're on
Hi.
The air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome. What do you think?
I've got a couple comments. I'm a little bit offended as a woman to see how Harriet Myers has been treated. I think that she is obviously qualified on many levels, or she would not have gotten to the level that she has as a professional. And I think that she should have been given a chance to defend her views and to make her views known to the public. That's my first comment. The second comment is that I think that George Bush has played a very dangerous game. He has aligned himself with the religious conservatives in this country, and he is finding out now that they have really hijacked the Republican Party. I think that he needs to stand up and call moderates to stand up for what they believe in the Republican Party, or I think that we're going to be in trouble in this country.
Let me ask you, Janice, so when Laura Bush said, I forget the exact words, but she said she saw a little bit of sexism maybe going on in Harriet Myers' treatment, you agree?
I agree with that, because I think, I'm going to tell you why. Harriet Myers is not your typical A-type personality. She's not, you know, loud. She's not, you know, like a, who can I compare her with? You know, like a Condoleezza Rice. She doesn't, you know, she doesn't appear to be like a really strong person, but that does not disqualify her. There are lots of brilliant people that are quiet. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily look like they're the most, you know, like they're the warrior on the court, but they're very intelligent and they can make intelligent decisions, and they're also qualified. I think that it is sexist to say that because somebody is soft-spoken that they cannot do the job.
Janice, we've got it, and we appreciate your call. Jonathan Turley, how about it? The treatment of this candidate. I mean, she may not have had the qualifications of John Roberts, but she was not nobody. Did her gender, her age, the way she batted her eyes at the president play against her here? Do you see sexism?
No, I don't. And, you know, I think that the sexist thing would be to, you know, treat her differently, and to look at her resume and say, because she's a woman, we're going to adopt a different standard. If she was a man, she would have been given the same treatment. In some ways, she may have been given harsher treatment. I think she was selected because they wanted to pick a woman. There are other more qualified women out there. Harriet Myers clearly did not have the background to justify a Supreme Court nomination. And I think that the First Lady and others throw around the sexist issue much too freely. I don't even think that it came in any way into the equation. You know, the conservatives were putting up a number of women. The very people that criticized Harriet Myers were people that were suggesting other women who were more qualified. And I think that there's a real danger when we play this type of politics with the court. For those of us who love the judiciary and love the constitutional system, we felt betrayed. I mean, I don't agree with the president on his politics. I don't agree on who he's likely to nominate. But I much prefer a very conservative nominee who is also someone with intellectual depth that has been shown. Harriet Myers didn't make a single substantive contribution to the law in decades of practice. We couldn't find a single law review article where she made a substantive contribution. That's really a conspicuous omission in a resume when you're about to join the highest court.
Richard Viguerie, we just got you for another minute here. Look forward with us. Do you see the court turning that corner that you and other conservatives so ardently wish for, that would turn back a lot of its decisions in the last few decades now? Is this the straw that's going to turn things that way?
Well, you know, that's clearly what the American people want. You know, election after election, they have returned Republicans to office because they agree that, you know, we've wandered off the reservation in terms of the values that we find important in this country.
Do you want the knockdown drag out in the Senate now? Do you say
option? I don't want that, but it's okay to have a filibuster. That's part of the American process. And then let's take it to the voters and have a political solution to this. If the Democrats want to filibuster, I think that they will be, regret it deeply. That's why Tom Daschle is not in the Senate right now. It's an opportunity for the president to repair his relationships with his conservative base. And when you're in trouble politically, the number one thing you want to do is change the subject. And here's an opportunity for him to change the subject and start debating Democrats on his terrain, not on their terrain.
Well, there's been a lot of change going on just in the last 24 hours between the Fed and now Harriet Myers. And, well, we'll soon hear from Patrick Fitzgerald. Richard Viguerie, thank you very much for being with us in this hour.
Always a pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Longtime conservative activist, Republican strategist, and pioneer in direct mail political campaigning. You know what that means, Richard Viguerie. We're talking this hour about Harriet Myers out as Supreme Court nominee by her own withdrawal. You can join the conversation, 1-800-423-8255. Will President Bush now feel politically required to name a hardcore conservative for the Supreme Court? What do you expect next here? 1-800-423-TALK. Jonathan Turley, Jack Beatty, please stand by. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Harriet Myers out as Supreme Court nominee by her own withdrawal this morning and what comes next for President Bush and the court. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. What do you make of all that's going on today? We're joined right now from Boston by Ellen Goodman, syndicated columnist, read right across the country, has written about Harriet Myers in the midst of her troubles here. Ellen, wonderful to have you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Fine, Tom.
How do you read the gender factor in this whole drama, Ellen Goodman?
Well, I think it was one of those cases where, she was treated shabbily in some ways because of her gender, and that wasn't the final issue. She didn't have the people on the right thought she wasn't right enough. The people on the left suspected her of being too right. And in the middle, nobody thought she was competent. She just ended up with no constituency.
Peggy Noonan wrote that one of her options, the one she's taken, could be called the Tim McCarthy. That was the Secret Service agent who took the bullet for Ronald Reagan, saying she'd show toughness and professionalism. She would appear wholly admirable if she withdrew her name, took the bullet for President Bush. Do you think she looks tough and professional this morning?
Oh, no. I think it's a complete loss for her. She goes from having had a good job with a swell concern, i.e. the White House, to having lost status and respect and credibility, and having had her credentials and her life, her intelligence questioned. So I think it's a terrible loss for her. And did she fall on her sword for the president? Yeah. But has her use even to him been diminished? Absolutely.
And Ellen, you've got great long antenna. What do you see coming now? Do you think the president will go for someone way over on the right? What are your concerns as this slot opens up again?
I think the left was somewhat quieter. Certainly the pro-choice community was, in a state of sort of quiet anxiety because they thought, as with Roberts, that this might be as good as it gets. I mean, bad, but not as bad as the next one. And that was certainly the thinking behind the support for Roberts. And I think to a certain extent it was behind some of the,
quietude over there.
Relative quiet, certainly from the pro-choice community on Harriet Myers. And if the president thinks he now has to placate the far right, the next candidate can only be worse. And it's a shame that so much of this nomination hinges on abortion, since there are a whole lot of other issues that come before the Supreme Court. But that is in such jeopardy that people think about it first, quite frankly.
Likely to be very front and center. Ellen, it's always good to hear your voice. Thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Syndicated columnist Ellen Goodman. Let's take a call. Clifton is calling from Fairfax, Virginia. Hi, Clifton. You're on the air. Hello, Clifton. Are you there, my friend? Let's take another call. We've got Arlington, Massachusetts calling in. Frank is there, I hope. Frank, are you with
us? Hi, Frank. How are you?
Yes. What's on your mind? Yes, loud and clear.
You've got a great show. Thank you. I'm a little suspicious of this nomination right from the get-go, both the nomination and all the things that have been wrong with it, and the timing of pulling the plug. It's been taking a lot of newsprint away from the real problems of the country. Iraq among them, Katrina, the list goes on. But anyways, if the plug is going to get pulled and a new person is going to get speculated, we'll speculate about a new person, just as Mr. Fitzgerald is about to issue his report, which is probably going to reach into and indict people in the White House.
Frank, this is very deep suspicion indeed that all of this, the president would put himself all the way out on this limb just to do a kind of dance of seven veils in front of everything else?
Well, if you just look at the way things have transpired and all of the, I think it's somewhat factual that all of the things that have been talked about Ms. Myers and all of the shortcomings, and now why would he do that?
That's about as skeptical as you can get, and we hear it, Frank, loud and clear. Thanks very much for your call. I want to turn now, if I may, to Anthony Lewis, former columnist for the New York Times, two-time Pulitzer Prize winner. He joins us in this hour from Boston. Tony Lewis, thank you very much for being with us. How do you interpret what's happened here?
Well, it's, of course, first of all, a tremendous defeat for the president. He misjudged, I think, two things. What the public thinks is required of a Supreme Court justice, a certain eminence, whether it doesn't have to be a judge, but somebody who's made a real mark in the legal community, which Harriet Myers had not done. And he misjudged the attitude of the zealot Republicans, the conservative zealots, who were determined to have someone who was not a judge in the ordinary sense of the word, but the carrier of an ideology. And there's a certain irony, because that was the base that Karl Rove built for President Bush, the ideologues on the right, and now they've done him in.
You may have heard, we just spoke with Richard Viguerie, a conservative. You might call him a zealot. He says, bring on the fight with the Democrats. Let's go to the filibuster. Let's wrestle this thing to the mat. The conservatives are ready to take the court and take the country now. As a political matter, do you see that, Tony Lewis?
It's a possibility. It's a big choice for the president. Does he now yield to the extremists who sabotaged him here? Or does he pick a more neutral figure? And I want to say, I don't know if others have said this, because I've been mm-hmm. running around and haven't been able to hear the early part of
yes.
the show.
Mm-hmm.
But there are plenty of women out there, if it's to be a woman, and I think it should be, and the president evidently does think it should be. There are plenty of women who are distinguished lawyers. There are judges like Chief Justice Donnell Taha of the 10th Federal Circuit, who was appointed by President Reagan, Chief Justice of Minnesota Kathleen Blatz. You know, there are a lot of distinguished women lawyers out there. You don't have to take an obscure figure, but they don't come with that certified ideology that Mr. Viguerie and his colleagues want.
And if Anthony Lewis was drawing the line, was whispering in the senator's ears about where to go to the so-called nuclear option, where to filibuster, where does that line fall? We've heard this morning Edith Jones' name, Alice Batchelder, Mike McConnell. How far is too far to you, Tony Lewis?
Well, that's a hard one. I don't think I'd put Michael McConnell within that line. I mean, I think we have to remember that George W. Bush was elected president, and he has to be allowed a certain flexibility, a certain room in picking his appointees. I don't think he's going to pick my choice, and I don't think he should. That's not the way the democracy works. On the other hand, if he goes for someone who is too extreme for even moderate Republicans, like a couple of the other names you've mentioned, then I think you draw the line. Judge McConnell is a former professor. He's on the conservative side, but he's, you know, he's a bit more like the new Chief Justice, who, you know, conservative, but he hasn't made a life of ideology.
Jonathan Turley, do you think the president can now put out a nomination that will both pass and satisfy his most conservative critics, the ones who perhaps have sent Harriet Myers packing today?
Oh, I think he can. The important thing is that he really needed to hit a home run. I mean, another grounder is going to be a serious problem for him. I mean, he's risking becoming a lame duck president about a year too early. And there's lots of people to pick from. But, you know, the type of judgment he used in the Meyer nomination was really, I think, shocking for a lot of people. It's also shocking, I think, for those of us to sort of look historically at the court, that he seemed to really forget about the potential legacy that he was giving up by picking someone like Myers and walking past people like Michael Luttig or Michael McConnell or, mm-hmm. or people of that kind. Now, there are plenty of people to choose from who are bright and young and more in the model of Roberts. If you want to go for a stealth candidate, you'd probably pick someone like Diane Sykes on the Seventh Circuit, who has virtually no real record, very much like Roberts, a sort of Federalist Society person. If you want to throw red meat to the Republicans, they may conclude that to rally his base, he should go ahead and start a fight. I mean, as strange as that seems, you know, if Karl Rove has shown us one thing in his brilliance, it is that controversy is not always a bad thing. And maybe this is a time that he wants to start a fight. I don't know. I'm not a very good political judge on that. But if he wants to start a fight, then he just has to nominate Edith Jones.
And you heard Richard Viguerie, conservative, saying earlier, Mr. President, you've got too much trouble. Start that fight. Take it to the mat right now, and that will drive the agenda. I want to get our callers in here, if I may. Tom's calling from Buffalo. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you think?
I was thinking about Harry Myers, Henry Reid. I think he's done a great job, Harry Reid. I was surprised when he came out for Harriet Myers, but then they just all laid back in the weeds. They came out, they were nice to her, civil, and they knew this was going nowhere.
And why do you think that was a good strategy?
Because now when it comes to, as previous more right-wing philosophy people were saying, if it comes to a fight that was a nuclear option, the vast majority of American voters believe in simple things. And the right wing's been great at getting their message across simply to the American people. An up or down vote is the only fair way to go. Mm-hmm. That sounds great to American people. Well, they just denied Harriet Myers an up or down vote, so we can go ahead and do what we want.
So are you hoping for a more conservative candidate than Harriet Myers or less, Tom?
I hope they give us Edith Jones. Because we will win the filibuster fight. And if they go nuclear option, so be it. When Fitzgerald comes down with what he has, they're not going to have their finger on the nuclear button in a very long time.
So give it to us straight up, you say. Give us that hardline conservative justice, and let's have the battle royal. Tony Lewis, how about it? What do you think the odds are, looking over this vast mural, that we are about to turn that corner, that the court goes that way?
It's possible. I can't read their minds, and as somebody has just intimated, we have to wait till the end of today to know whether Karl Rove's advice is still very treasured. But I am a believer in the Supreme Court and somebody who worships that institution and has for all my adult life, and I don't want to have a fight for the sake of a fight. I want to see the kind of thing that the president did with John Roberts. That was a home run. It was something that reflected respect for the court as an institution, and that's what I want. I don't want an appointment of any kind that's just there to have a fight. I think that's a bad idea.
Jack Beatty, how do you read the moving impulse now? It's hard to know with Rove back on his heels. Can you imagine the White House going for, you know, roll up the sleeves and let's have the Donnybrook here, or are you smelling them looking for another John Roberts?
Well, if I had to bet, I would go for credentials. That if they have someone who's just qualified, like a McConnell, whose views on abortion may not be to the pleasure of the Democrats. McConnell has compared Roe v. Wade to the Dred Scott decision, perhaps talking about it in a context of how controversial it was. Nevertheless, that's a radioactive statement. But the man is qualified. And if he can put someone like that up, where questions of ideology are trumped by scholarly work, by eminence, then he's going to do all right. But if there's somebody who just comes to them nakedly with the ideology and sticks that in their faces, then they're in a much stronger position than they were. This is a weakened and self-weakened president, and he doesn't scare them as much as he did even last spring.
And we can hear that. Anna's calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Anna. You're on the air.
Hi. I find myself very troubled by this, just in terms of the power of the far right, because they had every reason to be delighted with Harriet Myers.
Did they? Was she right enough for them?
husband, she was an evangelical. They received private assurances from the White House that she would likely overturn Roe v. Wade. So if she's not far right enough for the country, I don't know what that means. That seems to that there are people who really desire a much more fascistic direction for our nation, and that's a scary thing. I mean, whether it's a stealth candidate or an overt candidate, the kind of justice that people seem to be clamoring for could be very dangerous.
I'm sure Republicans would use a different word, but we hear your fear there. Anthony Lewis, what about the legacy of the kind of Christian attestation that emerged in this brief nomination? The White House, you know, going to conservative reporters and supporters and saying, you can trust her, she's an evangelical. Do you see that now being whisked away as a legacy with her withdrawal, or is that a new kind of litmus test sitting there?
Well, that was Anna's very good point, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I am inclined to think that having been trotted out for Harriet Myers, it will be put back on the shelf because it didn't have a very happy reaction even among Republicans, some Republicans who thought it was not the right thing to do. We don't have religious tests for office in this country, at least we haven't. I want to say just one word of sympathy for Harriet Myers. I've thought all along that she was being brutalized in a very unfair way. I thought she was not an appropriate choice for the court because she lacked the credentials, Jack Beatty's word.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think she deserved the really rough treatment she got, and I have a lot of sympathy for her.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Tony Lewis, sum up the moment for us. You can hear the spectrum of views of where we are right now in this country, everything from callers welcoming a much more conservative nomination to our caller Anna saying she fears the country's heading in a fascistic direction. What do you see the juncture we're sitting at? How do you see it?
Is that for Jonathan? Or
for Anthony Lewis first, if I may.
I'm not sure I have the answer to that, Tom. I think this is only part. The Supreme Court nomination is of signal importance, and I've told you how much I care about
mm-hmm.
it, about the court. On the other hand, and the right does see it very candidly, as Vigory said, as the way to sort of cement control of the country. They've mm-hmm. got the House, the Senate, the presidency, a lot of state legislatures. Now they want the Supreme Court. So it's extremely important, but it's part of a larger scene of the rise of the right. And I think maybe that rise of the right has peaked. I think Iraq, Katrina, now this, have shown, well, to put it as politely as I can, a lack of competence in governing, quite apart from ideology. I mean, you can hardly imagine a worse blunder in a president than appointing Harriet Myers and then having to sort of whimper away from it. It's not impressive.
Jonathan Turley, we've just got half a minute. The rise of the right peaking here or a second wind?
You know, I couldn't really say whether this is ebbing or flowing or rising or falling. I think American politics is not as predictable as all that. But what I can say is that this president has this curious scene where you have everyone trying to protect him from himself. I mean, this was the ultimate self-inflicted wound. And the question will now be whether he can redeem himself and gain the most important element of being president, and that is confidence. Senators have to trust you and trust your judgment. And I think it is true. This is a blunder of the first order. And so he has much to gain, even beyond a legacy in the short term. He has to gain credibility.
Jack Beatty, George W. Bush cannot be enjoying this day.
No, and as the day ticks on, he's going to enjoy it less and less, it appears.
If indictments come. Anthony Lewis, Pulitzer Prize-winning former columnist for The New York Times, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Jonathan Turley, law professor at George Washington University. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
And Jack Beatty, always great to have you. Thanks for being along.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.